When they had left Taita at the Red Stones, Kalula's bodyguards carried him down the river valley towards Tamafupa. He was in such distress that they went slowly and carefully. They halted every few hundred yards to let him drink from his gourd of medicine, to wet his face and wipe it with a damp cloth. Measured against the arc of the sun, it was almost 2 hours before they started the climb from the valley towards the gates of Tamafupa. As they entered a thicket of dense kitar thorn, a tall figure stepped onto the pathway. Kalulu and his women recognized him, not only by his headdress of flamingo feathers. The women lowered the litter to the ground and prostrated themselves. "We see you, great chief," they chorused. Kalulu struggled up on one elbow and stared at the newcomer with trepidation. Basma was paramount chief of all the Basmara tribes that inhabited the land between Tamafupa and Kioga. Before the coming of the strangers, who had built the temple and raised the red stones from the depths of the lake, he had been a mighty ruler. Now his tribes were scattered and his rule disrupted. "Hail, mighty Basma," Kalula said respectfully. "I am your dog." Basma was his bitter rival and enemy. Until this time, Kalula had been protected by his reputation and status. Even the chief of the Basmara had not dared to harm a shaman of his power and influence. However, Kalula knew that ever since the damming of the Nile, Basma had been waiting for his opportunity. "I have been watching you, wizard," Basma said coldly. "I am honored that such a mighty chief would even notice my humble existence," Kalula murmured. 10 Basmara warriors stepped out of the thicket and formed up behind their chief. "You have led these enemies of the tribe to Tamafupa. They have taken over my town."
"They are not enemies," Kalula replied. "They are our friends and allies. Their leader is a great shaman, much more learned and powerful than I am. He has been sent here to destroy the red stones and to make the Nile flow again."
"What feeble lies are these, you pathetic legless thing? Those men are the same sorcerers that built the temple at the mouth of the river. The same wizards who called up the wrath of the dark spirits, who caused the lake waters to boil and the earth to burst open. They are the ones who conjured up the rocks from the depths and blocked off the great river, which is our mother and our father."
"That is not so." Kalula hopped off his litter and balanced on his stumps to confront Basma. "Those people are our friends." Slowly Basma raised his spear and pointed it at the dwarf. This was a gesture of condemnation. Kalula looked at his bodyguards. They were not members of a tribe subservient to Basma, one of the many reasons he had selected them. They came from a warrior tribe far to the north. However, when it came to a choice between himself and Basma, he could not be certain in which direction their loyalty would sway. As if in answer to his unspoken question, the 8 women tightened their ranks around him. Imbali the Flower was their leader. Her body might have been carved from anthracite. Her jet skin was anointed with oil so that it glowed in the sunlight. Her arms and legs were sleek with fine flat muscle. Her breasts were high and hard, decorated with an intricate pattern of ritual scarification. Her neck was long and proud. Her eyes were fierce. She loosened the battle axe from the loop at her waist. The others followed her example.
"Your whores will not save you now, Kalulu," Basma sneered disdainfully. "Kill the wizard," he shouted at his warriors, and hurled his spear at Kalulu.
Imbali anticipated the throw. She jumped forward, swung the battle axe in her right hand, and hit the spear in mid-air, knocking it straight upwards. As it fell back, she caught it neatly in her left hand and raised the point to meet the rush of warriors. The first man ran onto it, transfixing himself just below the sternum. He reeled backwards into the man coming up behind him, knocking him off balance. Then he dropped onto his back and lay kicking with the shaft of the spear standing out of his belly. Imbali leapt gracefully over his corpse and caught the man behind him before he could recover. She swung the axe in a rising stroke that lopped off his spear arm neatly at the elbow. She pirouetted and used the momentum to decapitate a third man as he rushed forward. The headless corpse dropped into a sitting position, the open arteries sending up a tall fountain of bright red, then flopped over and bled into the earth. Shielding Kalulu, Imbali and the other women fell back quickly and picked up the litter by its rawhide carrying straps. Then, using it as a battering ram, they charged into the Basmara. Their war cry was a shrill ululation as the axe blades whistled and fluted, then thudded into flesh and bone. Basma's men rallied swiftly. They met the women with a wall of locked shields and threw their long spears at their heads. One went down, killed outright with a flint point through her throat. The others raised the litter and hammered it into the line of shields. Both sides heaved against each other. One of the Basmara dropped to his knees and stabbed up under the bottom edge of the litter into the belly of the girl at the centre of the line. She released her grip and reeled backwards. She tried to turn away, but her assailant jerked his spear free and stabbed again, aiming for her kidneys. The blow went in deep, and the girl screamed as the blade slipped alongside her spine, crippling her instantly. Kalulu's bodyguards retreated a few steps, filled the gap left by the wounded girl, and held the litter steady. The Basmara raised their shields and once more charged shoulder to shoulder. As they crashed into the litter, they stabbed up under the bottom edge of the shields, aiming for groins and bellies. The line of shields swayed back and forth. Two more girls went down, one hit in the upper thigh, so that the femoral artery erupted. She fell back and tried to stem the bleeding by pushing her fingers into the wound to pinch the artery closed. While she was bowed over, her back was exposed, and Basmara stabbed her in the spine. The spearhead found the point between her vertebra, and her paralyzed legs gave way. The man stabbed her again, but while he was concentrating on killing her, Imbali ducked under the litter and chopped deep into his skull. The uneven pressure on the litter slewed it round. Kalulu was left unprotected on one flank. Chief Basma seized the moment. He darted out of the wall of shields, dodged around the litter, and ran at him. Kalulu saw him coming and swung himself into a handstand. With amazing agility, he shot towards the shelter of the nearby thicket of kitar thorns. He had almost reached it when Basma overhauled him and stabbed him twice. "Traitor!" the chief screamed, and the spearhead hit Kalulu in the centre of the back. With a huge effort, he managed to stay balanced on his hands. He bounced along, but Basma caught up with him again. "Witchmonger!" he yelled and thrust again, deeply, through the little man's inverted crotch and into his belly. Kalulu howled and tumbled into the thicket. Basma tried to follow up his attack, but from the corner of his eye he saw Imbali rushing at him with her axe above her head. He ducked, and when her blade hissed past his ear, he swerved away from her return stroke and ran. His men saw him go and followed, pelting away down the slope. "The sorcerer is dead!" Basma shouted. His warriors took up the chant. "Kalulu is dead! The familiar of devils and demons is slain! Leave them to run back to the bitches that whelped them!" Imbali stopped her girls chasing them. "We must save our master!" By the time they found him in the thicket, Kalulu was curled into a ball, whimpering with pain. Tenderly they extricated him from the hooked thorn branches and placed him on his litter. At that moment a shout from further down the slope checked them. "It is the voice of the old man!" Imbali had recognized Taita and ululated to direct them. Soon Taita and Fen came into view, following closely by a party carrying Meron on his litter. "Kalulu, you are wounded grievously," Taita said gently. "Nay, Magus, not wounded," Kalulu shook his head painfully. "I fear I am slain." "Swiftly, take him to the camp," Taita told Imbali, and her three surviving companions. "And you men?" He picked out four following Meron's litter. "Your help is needed here." "Wait!" Kalulu seized Taita's hand to prevent him leaving. "The man who did this is Basma, the paramount chief of Basmara." "Why did he attack you? You are his subject, surely." "Basma believes that you are of the same tribe who built the temple, and that you have come here to instigate further calamity and catastrophe. He thinks I have joined with you to destroy the land, the rivers, the lakes, and to kill all the Basmara." "He has gone now. Your women have driven him away." Taita tried to reassure and calm him. Kalula would have none of it.
"He will return."
He reached up and seized Taita's wrist as he stooped over the litter.
"You must get into the town and prepare to defend yourselves. Basma will return with all his regiments.
When I leave Tamafupa, I will take you with me, Kalulu. Our pursuit of the witch cannot succeed without your help."
"I can feel the bleeding deep in my belly. I will not be going on with you."
Before sunset, Kalula died. The four bodyguards dug an adit into the side of a large abandoned anthill outside the stockade of Tamafupa. Taita wrapped the corpse in a sheet of unbleached linen, and they laid it in the damp clay tunnel. Then they sealed it with large boulders to prevent the hyenas digging it out.
"Your ancestral gods will welcome you, Shaman Kalulu, for you were of the truth," Taita bade him farewell.
Then he turned away from the tomb. The four bodyguards stood before him, and Imbali spoke for them all in the Shilluk language.
"Our master is gone. We are far from our own land, alone. You are a mighty shaman, greater even than Kalulu. We will follow you."
Taita looked at Nakonto. "What do you make of these women? If I enlist them, will you take them under your command?" he asked. Nakonto considered the question solemnly.
"I have seen them fight. I will be content to have them follow me."
With a regal tilt of her head, Imbali acknowledged his presence and his words.
"For as long as it pleases us to do so, we will march shoulder to shoulder with this strutting Shilluk rooster, but not behind him," she told Taita.
Her eyes were almost on a level with Nakonto's. The magnificent pair stared at each other with apparent scorn. Taita opened his inner eye and smiled as he saw how their auras mirrored the inclination they felt towards each other.
"Nakonto, is it agreed?" he asked. "It is agreed."
Nakonto made another lordly gesture of acquiescence.
"For the time being."